never gotten used to Egwene's refusal to admit she was Andoran herself. At least, lines on maps said the Two Rivers was part of Andor, and Elaine believed the maps. "We have fought wars against them, Egwene, but since the damage they suffered in the Aiel War, Andor has sold them nearly as much grain as Tyr has. The trade has stopped now. With every Kyrian in house fighting every other for the Sun Throne, who would buy the grain or see it distributed to the people? If the fighting is as bad as what we've seen on the banks, well, you cannot feed a people for 20 years and feel nothing for them when they must be starving." "A grey man," Egwene said, and Elaine jumped, trying to look in every direction at once. The glow of Sidar surrounded her. "Where?" Egwene took a slower look around the decks, but to make sure no one was close enough to overhear. Captain Elisor still stood in the stern by the shirtless man holding the long tiller. Another sailor was up in the very bow, scanning the waters ahead for signs of submerged mudbanks, and two more padded about the deck, now and again adjusting a rope to the sails. The rest of the crew were all below. One of the pair stopped to check the lashings on the rowboat tied upside down on the deck. She waited for him to go on before speaking. "Fool," she muttered softly. "Me, Elaine, not you, so don't glower at me like that." She continued in a whisper, "A grey man is after Matt, Elaine. That must be what that dream meant, but I never saw it. I am a fool." The glow around Elaine vanished. "Do not be so hard on yourself," she whispered back. "Perhaps it does mean that, but I did not see it, and neither did Nynaeve." She paused. Red-gold curls swung as she shook her head. "But it doesn't make sense, Egwene. Why would a grey man be after Matt? There is nothing in my letter to my mother that could harm us in the slightest." "I do not know why," Egwene frowned. "There has to be a reason. I am sure that is what the dream means." "Even if you are right, Egwene, there is nothing you can do about it." "I know that," Egwene said bitterly. She did not even know whether he was ahead of them or behind. Ahead, she suspected. Matt would have left without any delay. "Either way," she muttered to herself, "it does no good. I finally know what one of my dreams means, and it doesn't help a hemstitch worth." "But if you know one meaning," Elaine told her, "perhaps now you will know others. If we sit down and talk them over, perhaps..." The blue crane gave a shuddering lurch, throwing Elaine to the deck and Egwene on top of her. When Egwene struggled to her feet, the shoreline no longer slid by. The vessel had halted, with the bow raised and the deck canted to one side. The sails flapped noisily in the wind. Chin Elsinore pushed himself to his feet and ran for the bow, leaving the tillerman to rise on his own.
"You blind worm of a farmer!" he roared toward the man in the bow, who was clinging to the rail to keep from falling the rest of the way over. "You dirt-grubbing get of a goat! Haven't you been on the river long enough yet to recognize how the water ruffles over a mudflat?"
He seized the man on the rail by the shoulders and pulled him back onto the deck, but only to shove him out of the way so he could peer down over the bow himself.
"If you've put a hole in my hull, I will use your guts for caulking!"
The other crewmen were clambering to their feet now, and more came scrambling up from below. They all ran to cluster around the captain. Nynaeve appeared at the head of the ladder that led down to the passenger cabins, still straightening her skirts. With a sharp tug at her braid, she frowned at the knot of men in the bow, then strode to Egwene and Elaine. "He ran us onto something, did he? After all his talk of knowing the river as well as he knows his wife, the woman probably never receives as much as a smile from him." She jerked the thick braid again and went forward, pushing her way through the sailors to reach the captain. They were all intent on the water below. There was no point in joining her. "He will have us off faster if he's left to it." Nynaeve was probably telling him how to do the work. Elaine seemed to feel the same way from the rueful shake of the head she gave as she watched the captain and crewmen all turn their attention respectfully from whatever was under the bow to Nynaeve. A ripple of agitation ran through the men and grew stronger. For a moment the captain's hands could be seen, waving in protest over the other men's heads, and then Nynaeve was striding away from them,
They made way, bowing now, with Elisor hurrying beside her and mopping his round face with a large red handkerchief. His anxious voice became audible as they drew near. "A good 15 miles to the next village on the Andor side, Aes Sedai, and at least 5 or 6 miles downriver on the Kyrian side. Andoran soldiers hold it is true, but they do not hold the miles from here to there." He wiped at his face as if he were dripping sweat. "A sunken ship," Nynaeve told the other two women. "The work of river brigands, the captain thinks. He means to try backing off it with the sweeps, but he does not seem to think that will work." "We were running fast when we hit, Aes Sedai. I wanted to make good speed for you." Elisor rubbed even harder at his face. He was afraid the Aes Sedai would blame him, Egwene realized. "We are stuck hard, but I do not think we are taking water, Aes Sedai. There is no need to worry. Another ship will be along. 2 sets of sweeps will surely get us free. There is no need for you to be put ashore, Aes Sedai. I do swear it by the light."
"You were thinking of leaving the ship?" Egwene asked. "Do you think that is wise?"
"Of course it's..." Nynaeve stopped and frowned at her. Egwene returned the frown with a level stare. Nynaeve went on in a calmer tone, if still a tight one.
"The captain says it may be an hour before another ship comes along, one with enough sweeps to make a difference. Or a day. Or 2, maybe. I do not think we can afford to waste a day or 2 waiting. We can be in this village... what did you call it, Captain? Jurine? We can walk to Jurine in 2 hours or less. If Captain Elisor frees his vessel as quickly as he hopes, we can reboard then. He says he will stop to see if we are there. If he does not get free, though, we can take ship from Jurine. We may even find a vessel waiting. The captain says traders do stop there because of the Andoran soldiers." She drew a deep breath, but her voice grew tighter. "Have I explained my reasoning fully enough? Do you need more?"
"It is clear to me," Elaine put in quickly before Egwene could speak. "And it sounds a good idea. You think it is a good idea too, don't you, Egwene?"
Egwene gave a grudging nod.
"I suppose so."
"But Aes Sedai," Elisor protested. "At least go to the Andor bank. The war, Aes Sedai. Brigands and every sort of ruffian, and the soldiers not much better. The very wreck under our bow shows the sort of men they are."
"We have not seen a living soul on the Kyrian side," Nynaeve said. "And in any case, we are far from defenseless, Captain. And I will not walk 15 miles where I can walk 6.
"Of course, Aes Sedai." Elisor really was sweating now. "I did not mean to suggest..." "Of course you are not defenseless, Aes Sedai. I did not mean to suggest it."
He wiped his face furiously, but it still glistened. Nynaeve opened her mouth, glanced at Egwene, and seemed to change what she had intended to say. "I'm going below for my things," she told the air halfway between Egwene and Elaine, then turned on Elisor. "Captain, make your rowboat ready."
He bowed and scurried away even before she turned for the hatch, and was shouting for men to put the boat over the side before she was below.
"If one of you says up," Elaine murmured, "the other says down. If you do not stop it, we may not reach Tyr."
"We will reach Tyr," Egwene said, "and sooner once Nynaeve realizes she is not the wisdom any longer. We are all..." She did not say accepted. There were too many men hurrying about. "On the same level now." Elaine sighed. In short order, the rowboat had ferried them ashore, and they were standing on the bank with walking staffs in hand, their belongings in bundles on their backs, and hung about them in pouches and scripts. Rolling grassland and scattered copses surrounded them, though the hills were forested a few miles in from the river. The sweeps on the Blue Crane were cutting up froth, but failing to budge the vessel. Egwene turned and started south without another glance, and before Nynaeve could take the lead. When the others caught up to her, Elaine gave her a reproving look. Nynaeve walked staring straight ahead. Elaine told Nynaeve what Egwene had said about Matt and a gray man, but the older woman listened in silence and only said,
He'll have to look after himself, without pausing in her stride. After a time, the daughter heir gave up trying to make the other two talk, and they all walked in silence. Clumps of trees close along the riverbank soon hid the blue crane, thick growths of water oak and willow. They did not go through the copses, small as they were, for anything at all might be hiding in the shadows under their branches. A few low bushes grew scattered between the thickets here close to the river, but they were too sparse to hide a child, much less a brigand, and they were widely spaced.
"If we do see brigands," Egwene announced, "I am going to defend myself. There is no Amarlin looking over our shoulders here."
Nynaeve's mouth thinned.
"If need be," she told the heir in front of her, "we can frighten off any brigands the way we did those white cloaks, if we can find no other way."
"I wish you would not talk of brigands," Elaine said. "I would like to reach this village without—"
A figure in brown and gray rose from behind a bush standing by itself almost in front of them.
Chapter 38 Maidens of the Spear. Egwene embraced Sayidar before the scream was well out of her mouth, and she saw the glow around Elaine, too. For an instant she wondered if Elisor had heard their screams and would send help. The blue crane could not be more than a mile upriver. Then she was dismissing the need for help, already weaving flows of air and fire into lightning. She could almost still hear their yelling. Nynaeve was simply standing there with her arms crossed beneath her breasts and a firm expression on her face, but Egwene was not sure whether that was because she was not angry enough to touch the true source, or because she had already seen what Egwene was just now seeing. The person facing them was a woman no older than Egwene herself, if somewhat taller. She did not let go of Sayidar. Men were sometimes silly enough to think a woman was harmless merely because she was a woman. Egwene had no such illusions. In a corner of her mind, she noted that Elaine was no longer surrounded by the glow. The daughter heir must still harbor foolish notions. She was never a Shan Chan prisoner. Egwene did not think many men would be stupid enough to think the woman in front of them was not dangerous, even though her hands were empty and she wore no visible weapon. Blue-green eyes and reddish hair cut short except for a narrow tail that hung to her shoulders. Soft, laced knee-boots and close-fitting coat and breeches all in the shades of earth and rock. Such coloring and clothing had been described to her once. This woman was Aiel. Looking at her, Egwene felt a sudden odd affinity for the woman. She could not understand it. She looks like Rand's cousin, that's why. Yet even that feeling, almost of kinship, could not stifle her curiosity. What under the light are Aiel doing here? They never leave the waste, not since the Aiel War. She had heard all of her life how deadly Aiel were, these maidens of the spear no less than the members of the male warrior societies. But she felt no particular fear, and indeed some irritation at having been afraid. With Sayidar feeding the one power into her, she had no need to fear anyone, except maybe a fully trained sister, she admitted. But certainly not one woman, even if she is Aiel.
"My name is Avienda," the Aiel woman said, "of the Nine Valleys Sept of the Tarad Aiel."
Her face was as flat and expressionless as her voice.
"I am Far Darai Smai, a maiden of the spear."
She paused a moment, studying them.
"You have not the look in your faces, but we saw the rings. In your lands, you have women much like our wise ones, the women called Aes Sedai. Are you women of the White Tower or not?"
For a moment, Egwene did feel unease.
"We?"
She looked around them carefully, but saw no one behind any bush within 20 paces. If there were others, they had to be in the next thicket, more than 200 paces ahead, or in the last one, twice that distance behind. Too far to threaten. Unless they have bows. But they would have to be good with them. Back home in the competitions at Beltane and Sunday, only the best bowmen shot at any distance much beyond 200 paces. But she still felt better knowing she could hurl a lightning bolt at anyone who tried such a shot. "We are women of the White Tower," Nynaeve said calmly. She was very obvious in not looking around for other Aiel.
Even Elaine was peering about.
"Whether you would consider any of us wise is another matter," Nynaeve went on. "What do you want of us?"
Avienda smiled. She was really quite lovely, Egwene realized. The grim expression had masked it.
"You talk as the wise ones do, to the point and small suffering of fools."
Her smile faded, but her voice remained calm.
"One of us lies gravely hurt, perhaps dying. The wise ones often heal those who would surely die without them, and I have heard Aes Sedai can do more. Will you aid her?"
Egwene almost shook her head in confusion. A friend of hers is dying? She sounds as if she is asking if we'll lend her a cup of barley flour.
"I will help her if I can," Nynaeve said slowly. "I cannot make promises, Avienda. She may die despite anything I can do."
"Death comes for us all," the Aiel said. "We can only choose how to face it when it comes. I will take you to her."
Two women in Aiel garb stood up no more than 10 paces away, one out of a little fold in the ground that Egwene would not have supposed could hide a dog, and the other in grass that reached only halfway to her knees. They lowered their black veils as they stood. That gave her another jolt. She was sure Elaine had told her the Aiel only hid their faces when they might have to do killing, and settled the cloth that had wrapped their heads about their shoulders. One had the same reddish hair as Avienda, with gray eyes, the other dark blue eyes and hair like fire. Neither was any older than Egwene or Elaine, and both looked ready to use the short spears in their hands. The woman with fiery hair handed Avienda weapons, a long, heavy-bladed knife to belt at her waist, and a bristling quiver for the other side, a dark curved bow that had the dull shine of horn in a case to fasten on her back, and 4 short spears with long points to grip in her left hand, along with a small, round hide buckler. Avienda wore them as naturally as a woman in Emmons Field would wear a scarf, just as her companions did. "Come," she said, and started for the thicket they had already passed. Egwene finally released Saidar. She suspected all 3 of the Aiel could stab her with those spears before she could do anything about it, if that was what they wanted. But though they were wary, she did not think they would.
"And what if Nynaeve can't heal their friend? I wish she would ask before she makes these decisions that involve all of us."
As they headed for the trees, the Aiel scanned the land around them as if they expected the empty landscape to hold enemies as adept at hiding as themselves. Avienda strode ahead, and Nynaeve kept up with her.
"I'm Elaine of House Trakand," Egwene's friend said as if making conversation. "Daughter heir to Morghaes, Queen of Andor."
Egwene stumbled. "Light, is she mad? I know Andor fought them in the Aiel War. It might be 20 years, but they say Aiel have long memories."
But the flame-haired Aiel closest to her only said, "I am Bane, of the Black Rock sept of the Sharad Aiel."
"I am Chiad," the shorter, blonder woman on her other side said, "of the Stones River sept of the Goshien Aiel."
Bane and Chiad glanced at Egwene. Their expressions did not change, but she had the feeling they thought she was showing bad manners.
"I am Egwene Alvear," she told them.
They seemed to expect more, so she added,
"Daughter of Marin Alvear of Emmons Field in the Two Rivers."
That seemed to satisfy them in a way, but she would have bet they understood it no more than she did all these septs and clans.
It must mean families in some way.
"You are first sisters?" Bane seemed to be taking in all 3 of them. Egwene thought they must mean sisters, as it was used for Aes Sedai, and said, "Yes," just as Elaine said, "No." Chiad and Bane exchanged a very quick look that suggested they were talking to women who might not be completely whole in their minds.
"First sister," Elaine told Egwene as if she were lecturing, "means women who have the same mother. Second sister means their mothers are sisters."
She turned her words to the Aiel.
"We neither of us know a great deal of your people. I ask you to excuse our ignorance. I sometimes think of Egwene as a first sister, but we are not blood kin.
Then why do you not speak the words before your wise ones? Chiad asked. Bane and I became first sisters.
Egwene blinked.
How can you become first sisters? Either you have the same mother or you do not.
I do not mean to offend.
Most of what I know about the Maidens of the Spear comes from the little Elaine has told me. I know you fight in battle and don't care for men, but no more than that.
Elaine nodded. The way she had described the maidens to Egwene had sounded much like a cross between female warders and the Red Aja.
That look flashed back across the Aiel's faces, as if they were not certain how much sense Egwene and Elaine had.
We do not care for men? Chiad murmured as if puzzled.
Bane knotted her brow in thought.
What you say comes near truth, yet misses it completely.
When we wed the spear, we pledge to be bound to no man or child. Some do give up the spear for a man or a child. Her expression said she herself did not understand this. But once given up, the spear cannot be taken back.
Or if she is chosen to go to Ruidin, Chiad put in. A wise one cannot be wedded to the spear.
Bane looked at her as if she had announced the sky was blue, or that rain fell from clouds. The glance she gave Egwene and Elaine said perhaps they did not know these things.
Yes, that is true, though some try to struggle against it.
Yes, they do. Chiad sounded as though she and Bane were sharing something between them. But I have gone far from the trail of my explanation, Bane went on. The maidens do not dance the spears with one another even when our clans do, but the Sharad Aiel and the Goshien Aiel have held blood feud between them over 400 years, so Chiad and I felt our wedding pledge was not enough. We went to speak the words before the wise ones of our clans, she risking her life in my hold and I in hers, to bond us as first sisters. As is proper for first sisters who are maidens, we guard each other's backs, and neither will let a man come to her without the other. I would not say we do not care for men. Chiad nodded, with just the hint of a smile. Have I made the truth clear to you, Egwene?
Yes, Egwene said faintly.
She glanced at Elaine and saw the bewilderment in her blue eyes she knew must be in her own.
Not red, Aja. Green, maybe. A cross between warders and green, Aja, and I do not understand another thing out of that.
The truth is quite clear to me now, Bane. Thank you.
If the two of you feel you are first sisters, Chiad said, you should go to your wise ones and speak the words. But you are wise ones, though young. I do not know how it would be done in that case.
Egwene did not know whether to laugh or blush. She kept having an image of her and Elaine sharing the same man. No, that is only for first sisters who are maidens of the spear, isn't it? Elaine did have spots of color in her cheeks, and Egwene was sure she was thinking of Rand.
But we do not share him, Elaine. We can neither of us have him.
Elaine cleared her throat.
I do not think there is a need for that, Chiad. Egwene and I already guard each other's backs.
How can that be? Chiad asked slowly. You are not wedded to the spear, and you are wise ones. Who would lift a hand against a wise one?
This confuses me.
What need have you for guarding of backs? Egwene was spared having to come up with an answer by their arrival at the copse. There were two more Aiel under the trees, deep into the thicket, but next to the river. Jolien of the salt flat sept of the Na'kai Aiel, a blue-eyed woman with red-gold hair nearly the color of Elaine's, was watching over Dailin of Avienda's sept and clan. Sweat matted Dailin's hair, making it a darker red, and she only opened her gray eyes once when they first came near, then closed them again. Her coat and shirt lay beside her, and red stained the bandages wrapped around her middle.
She took a sword, Avienda said.
Some of those fools that the oath-breaking tree-killers call soldiers thought we were another handful of the bandits who infest this land. We had to kill them to convince them otherwise. But Dailan, can you heal her, Aes Sedai?
Nynaeve went to her knees beside the injured woman and lifted the bandages enough to peer under them. She winced at what she saw.
Have you moved her since she was hurt? There is scabbing, but it has been broken.
She wanted to die near water, Avienda said. She glanced once at the river, then quickly away again. Egwene thought she might have shivered, too.
Fools, Nynaeve began rummaging in her pouch of herbs. You could have killed her moving her with an injury like that. She wanted to die near water, she said disgustedly. Just because you carry weapons like men doesn't mean you have to think like them.
She pulled a deep wooden cup out of the bag and pushed it at Chiad.
Fill that! I need water to mix these so she can drink them.
Chiad and Bane stepped to the river's edge and returned together. Their faces never changed, but Egwene thought they had almost expected the river to reach up and grab them.
If we had not brought her here to the river, Aes Sedai, Avienda said, we would never have found you, and she would have died anyway.
Nynaeve snorted and began sifting powdered herbs into the cup of water, muttering to herself. Corran root helps make blood, and dogwort for knitting flesh, and heal all, of course, and... Her mutters trailed off into whispers too low to hear. Avienda was frowning at her.
The wise ones use herbs, Aes Sedai, but I had not heard that Aes Sedai used them.
I use what I use, Nynaeve snapped, and went back to sorting through her powders and whispering to herself.
She truly does sound like a wise one, Chiad told Bane softly, and the other woman gave a tight nod.
Dailin was the only Aiel without her weapons in hand, and they all looked ready to use them in a heartbeat.
Nynaeve surely isn't soothing anyone, Egwene thought. Get them talking about something, anything. Nobody feels like fighting if they're talking of something peaceful.
Do not be offended, she said carefully. But I notice you are all uneasy about the river. It does not grow violent unless there is a storm. You could swim in it if you wanted, though the current is strong away from the banks.
Elaine shook her head.
The Aiel looked blank.
Avienda said, I saw a man, a Shinaran, do this swimming, once.
I don't understand, Egwene said. I know there isn't much water in the waste, but you said you were Stones River Sept, Jolien. Surely you have swum in the Stones River?
Elaine looked at her as if she were mad.
Swim, Jolien said awkwardly. It means to get in the water? All that water?
With nothing to hold on to? She shuddered.
Aes Sedai, before I crossed the Dragon Wall, I had never seen flowing water I could not step across. The Stones River, some claim it had water in it once, but that is only boasting. There are only the stones. The oldest records of the Wise Ones and the Clan Chief say there was never anything but stone since the first day our Sept broke off from the High Plains Sept and claimed that land. Swim. She gripped her spears, as if to fight the very word.
Chiad and Bane moved a pace further from the riverbank.
Egwene sighed and colored when she met Elaine's eye. Well, I am not a daughter heir to know all these things. I will learn them, though.
As she looked around at the Aiel women, she realized that far from soothing them, she had put them even more on edge.
If they try anything, I will hold them with air.
She had no idea whether she could seize four people at once, but she opened herself to Sayidar, wove the flows in air, and held them ready. The power pulsed in her with eagerness to be used. No glow surrounded Elaine, and she wondered why. Elaine looked right at her and shook her head.
I would never harm an Aes Sedai, Avienda said abruptly. I would have you know that. Whether Dailin lives or dies, it makes no difference in that. I would never use this... She lifted one short spear a trifle. Against any woman. And you are Aes Sedai.
Egwene had the sudden feeling that the woman was trying to soothe them,
I knew that, Elaine said, as if talking to Avienda, but her eyes told Egwene the words were for her. No one knows much of your people, but I was taught that Aiel never harm women unless they are, what did you call it? Wedded to the spear. Bane seemed to think Elaine was failing to see truth clearly again. That is not exactly the way of it, Elaine. If a woman not wedded came at me with weapons, I would drub her until she knew better of it. A man might think a woman of your lands was wedded if she bore weapons. I do not know. Men can be strange. Of course, Elaine said. But so long as we do not attack you with weapons, you will not try to harm us. All four Aiel looked shocked, and she gave Egwene a quick, significant look. Egwene held on to Sidar anyway. Just because Elaine had been taught something did not mean it was true, even if the Aiel said the same thing, and Sidar felt good in her. Nynaeve lifted up Dailan's head and began pouring her mixture into the woman's mouth. Drink, she said firmly. I know it tastes bad, but drink it all. Dailan swallowed, choked, and swallowed again. Not even then, Aes Sedai, Avienda told Elaine. She kept her eyes on Dailan and Nynaeve, though. It is said that once before the breaking of the world we served the Aes Sedai, though no story says how. We failed in that service. Perhaps that is the sin that sent us to the threefold land. I do not know. No one knows what the sin was except maybe the wise ones or the clan chiefs, and they do not say. It is said if we fail the Aes Sedai again, they will destroy us. Drink it all, Nynaeve muttered. Swords! Swords and muscles and no brains! We are not going to destroy you, Elaine said firmly, and Avienda nodded. As you say, Aes Sedai. But the old stories are all clear on one point. We must never fight, Aes Sedai. If you bring your lightnings and your balefire against me, I will dance with them, but I will not harm you. Stabbing people, Nynaeve growled. She lowered Dailan's head and laid a hand on the woman's brow. Dailan's eyes had closed again. Stabbing women! Avienda shifted her feet and frowned again, and she was not alone among the Aiel. Balefire, Egwene said. Avienda, what is balefire? The Aiel woman turned her frown on her. Do you not know, Aes Sedai? In the old stories, Aes Sedai wielded it. The stories make it a fearsome thing, but I know no more. It is said we have forgotten much that we once knew. Perhaps the White Tower has forgotten much, too, Egwene said. I knew of it in that dream or whatever it was. It was as real as Tel Iran-Riad. I'd gamble with Matt on that. No right, Nynaeve snapped. No one has a right to tear bodies so. It is not right. Is she angry? Avienda asked uneasily. Chiad and Bane and Jolien exchanged worried looks. It is all right, Elaine said. It is much better than all right, Egwene added. She is getting angry, and it is much better than all right. The glow of Sidar surrounded Nynaeve suddenly. Egwene leaned forward, trying to see, and so did Elaine, and Dailan started up with a scream, eyes wide open. In an instant, Nynaeve was easing her back down, and the glow faded. Dailan's eyes slid shut, and she lay there panting. I saw it, Egwene thought. I think I did. She was not sure she'd even been able to make out all the many flows, much less the way Nynaeve had woven them together. What Nynaeve had done in those few seconds had seemed like weaving four carpets at once while blindfolded. Nynaeve used the bloody bandages to wipe Dailan's stomach, smearing away bright new red blood and black crusts of dried old. There was no wound, no scar, only healthy skin considerably paler than Dailan's face. With a grimace, Nynaeve took the bloody cloths, stood up, and threw them into the river. Wash the rest of that off her, she said, and put some clothes back on her. She's cold. And be ready to feed her. She will be hungry. She knelt by the water to wash her hands. Chapter 39. Threads in the Pattern. Jolyon put an unsteady hand to where the wound had been in Dylan's middle. When she touched smooth skin, she gasped as if she had not believed her own eyes. Nynaeve straightened, drying her hands on her cloak. Egwene had to admit that good wool did better for a towel than silk or velvet.
"I said wash her and get some clothes on her," Nynaeve snapped.
"Yes, wise one," Jolyon said quickly, and she, Chiad, and Bane all leaped to obey. A short laugh burst from Avienda, a laugh almost at the edge of tears.
"I have heard that a wise one in the Jagged Spire Sept is said to be able to do this, and one in the Four Holes Sept, but I always thought it was boasting."
She drew a deep breath, regaining her composure.
"Aes Sedai, I owe you a debt. My water is yours, and the shade of my sept hold will welcome you. Dailin is my second sister."
She saw Nynaeve's uncomprehending look and added, "She is my mother's sister's daughter. Close blood, Aes Sedai. I owe a blood debt."
"If I have any blood to spill," Nynaeve said dryly, "I will spill it myself. If you wish to repay me, tell me if there is a ship at Jurine, the next village south of here."
"The village where the soldiers fly the white lion banner?" Avienda said. "There was a ship there when I scouted yesterday. The old stories mentioned ships, but it was strange to see one. The light sended is still there."
Nynaeve began putting away her folded papers of powdered herbs. "I have done what I can for the girl, Avienda, and we must go on. All that she needs now is food and rest. And try not to let people stick swords in her."
"What comes, comes, Aes Sedai," the Aiel woman replied.
"Avienda," Egwene said, "feeling as you do about rivers, how do you cross them? I'm sure there is at least one river nearly as big as the Arinen between here and the waste."
"The Alguenya," Elaine said, "unless you went around it."
"You have many rivers, but some have things called bridges where we had need to cross, and others we could wade. For the rest, Jolyon remembered that wood floats." She slapped the trunk of a tall whitewood. "These are big, but they float as well as a branch. We found dead ones and made ourselves a little ship, of two or three lashed together to cross the big river."
She said it matter-of-factly. Egwene stared in wonder. If she were as afraid of something as the Aiel obviously were of rivers, could she make herself face it the way they did? She did not think so. "What about the Black Aja?" a small voice asked. "Have you stopped being afraid of them?"
"That is different," she told it. "There's no bravery in that. I either hunt them, or else I sit like a rabbit waiting for a hawk."
She quoted the old saying to herself, "It is better to be the hammer than the nail."
"We had best be on our way," Nynaeve said.
"In a moment," Elaine told her. "Avienda, why have you come all this way and put up with such hardship?"
Avienda shook her head disgustedly. "We have not come far at all. We were among the last to set out. The wise ones nipped at me like wild dogs circling a calf, saying I had other duties."
Suddenly she grinned, gesturing to the other Aiel.
"These stayed back to taunt me in my misery, so they said, but I do not think the wise ones would have let me go if they had not been there to companion me."
"We seek the one foretold," Bane said. She was holding a sleeping Dailin so Chiad could slip a shirt of brown linen onto her. "He who comes with the dawn."
"He will lead us out of the threefold land," Chiad added. "The prophecies say he was born of Far Dara's Mai."
Elaine looked startled.
"I thought you said the maidens of the spear were not allowed to have children. I am sure I was taught that."
Bane and Chiad exchanged those looks again, as if Elaine had come near truth and yet missed it once more.
"If a maiden bears a child," Avienda explained carefully, "she gives the child to the wise ones of her sept, and they pass the child to another woman in such a way that none knows whose child it is."
She, too, sounded as if she were explaining that stone,
is hard. Every woman wants to foster such a child in the hope she may raise he who comes with the dawn. Or she may give up the spear and wed the man, Chiad said, and Bane added, there are sometimes reasons one must give up the spear. Avienda gave them a level look, but continued as if they had not spoken. Except that now the wise ones say he is to be found here, beyond the dragon wall. Blood of our blood mixed with the old blood raised by an ancient blood not ours. I do not understand it, but the wise ones spoke in such a way as to leave no doubts. She paused, obviously choosing her words. You have asked many questions, Aes Sedai. I wish to ask one. You must understand that we look for omens and signs. Why do three Aes Sedai walk a land where the only hand without a knife in it is a hand too weak with hunger to grasp the hilt? Where do you go? Tyr, Nynaeve said briskly. Unless we stay here talking until the heart of the stone crumbles to dust. Elaine began adjusting the cord of her bundle and the strap of her script for walking, and after a moment Egwene did the same. The Aiel women were looking at one another, Jolien frozen in the act of closing Dailin's gray-brown coat. Tyr? Avienda said in a cautious tone. Three Aes Sedai walking through a troubled land on their way to Tyr. This is a strange thing. Why do you go to Tyr, Aes Sedai? Egwene glanced at Nynaeve. Light, a moment ago they were laughing, and now they're as tense as they ever were. We hunt some evil women, Nynaeve said carefully. Dark friends. Shadow runners. Jolien twisted her mouth around the word as if she had bitten into a rotten apple. Shadow runners in Tyr, Bane said, and as if part of the same sentence, Chiad added, and three Aes Sedai seeking the heart of the stone. I did not say we were going to the heart of the stone, Nynaeve said sharply. I merely said I did not want to stay here till it falls to dust. Egwene, Elaine, are you ready? She started out of the thicket without waiting for an answer, walking staff, thumping the ground, and long strides carrying herself. Egwene and Elaine made hasty goodbyes before following after her. The four Aiel on their feet stood watching them go. When the two of them were a little way beyond the trees, Egwene said, My heart almost stopped when you named yourself. Weren't you afraid they might try to kill you, or to take you prisoner? The Aiel War was not that long ago, and whatever they said about not harming women who don't carry spears, they looked ready enough to use those spears on anything to me. Elaine shook her head ruefully. I have just learned how much I do not know about the Aiel, but I was taught that they do not think of the Aiel War as a war at all. From the way they behave toward me, I think maybe that much of what I learned is truth. Or maybe it was because they think I am Aes Sedai. I know they are strange, Elaine, but no one can call 3 years of battles anything but a war. I do not care how much they fight among themselves. A war is a war. Not to them. Thousands of Aiel crossed the spine of the world, but apparently they saw themselves more like thief-takers or headsmen, come after King Laemon of Cairhien for the crime of cutting down Avendar Aldera. To the Aiel, it was not a war, it was an execution. Avendar Aldera, according to one of Varen's lectures, had been an offshoot of the Tree of Life itself, brought to Cairhien some 400 years ago as an unprecedented offer of peace from the Aiel, given along with the right to cross the waste, a right otherwise given to none but peddlers, gleemen, and the Tuatha'an. Much of Cairhien's wealth had been built on the trade in ivory and perfumes and spices, and most of all silk, from the lands beyond the waste. Not even Varen had any idea of how the Aiel had come by a sapling of Avendasora. For one thing, the old books were clear that it made no seed. For another, no one knew where the Tree of Life was, except for a few stories that were clearly wrong. But surely the Tree of Life could have nothing to do with the Aiel. Or of why the Aiel had called the Cairhienan the water-sharers, or insisted their trains of merchant wagons fly a banner bearing the trefoil leaf of Avendasora.
Egwene supposed grudgingly that she could understand why they had started a war, even if they did not think it was one, after King Laemon cut down their gift to make a throne unlike any other in the world. Laemon's sin, she had heard it called. According to Varen, not only had Kyrian's trade across the waste ended with the war, but those Kyrianen who ventured into the waste now vanished. Varen claimed they were said to be sold as animals in the lands beyond the waste, but not even she understood how a man or a woman could be sold.
Egwene, Elaine said,
you know who he who comes with the dawn must be, don't you? Staring at Nynaeve's back, still well ahead of them, Egwene shook her head. Does she mean to race us to Jureen? Then almost stopped walking.
You do not mean...
Elaine nodded.
I think so. I do not know much of the prophecies of the dragon, but I have heard a few lines. One I remember is, on the slopes of Dragon Mount shall he be born, born of a maiden wedded to no man. Egwene, Rand does look like an Aiel. Well, he looks like the pictures I have seen of Tigraine, too, but she vanished before he was born, and I hardly think she could have been his mother anyway. I think Rand's mother was a maiden of the spear.
Egwene frowned in thought as she hurried along, running everything she knew of Rand's birth through her head. He had been raised by Tam Althor after Cari Althor died, but if what Moiraine said was true, they could not be his real mother and father. Nynaeve had sometimes seemed to know some secret about Rand's birth, but I will bet I couldn't pry it out of her with a fork. They caught up to Nynaeve, Egwene glowering as she thought, Nynaeve staring straight ahead toward Jureen and that ship, and Elaine frowning at the pair of them as if they were two children, sulking over who should have the larger piece of cake. After a time of silent strides, Elaine said,
"You handled that very well, Nynaeve. The healing, and the rest, too. I do not think they ever doubted you or Aes Sedai, or that we all were, because of the way you bore yourself."
"You did a good job," Egwene said after a minute. "That was the first time I have ever really watched what is done during a healing. It makes making lightning look like mixing oat cake." A surprised smile appeared on Nynaeve's face.
"Thank you," she murmured, and reached over to give Egwene's hair a little tug, the way she had when Egwene was a little girl. "I am not a little girl any longer."
The moment passed as quickly as it had come, and they went on in silence once more. Elaine sighed loudly. They covered another mile, or a little more, swiftly, despite swinging in from the river to go around the thickets along the bank. Nynaeve insisted on staying well clear of the trees. Egwene thought it was silly to think Mor Aiel would be hiding in the copses, but the swing inland did not add much distance to what they had to cover. None of the growths were very big. Elaine watched the trees, though, and she was the one who suddenly screamed, "Look out!" Egwene jerked her head around. Men were stepping out from among the trees, slings whirling round their heads. She reached for Sidar and something struck her head, and darkness drank everything. Egwene could feel herself swaying, feel something moving under her. Her head seemed to be nothing but pain. She tried to raise a hand to her temples, but something dug into her wrists, and her hands did not move.
"Better than lying there all day waiting for dark," a man's rough voice said. "Who knows if another ship would come by close in? And I don't trust that boat. It leaks."
"You do better hope Adden does believe you did see those rings before you did decide," another man said. "He does want fat cargoes, not women, I think."
The first man muttered something coarse about what Adden could do with his leaky boat, and the cargoes, too. Her eyes opened. Silver-flecked spots danced across her vision. She thought she might be going to throw up on the ground, swaying past under her head. She was tied across the back of a horse, her wrists and ankles joined by a rope running under its belly, her hair hanging down. It was still daylight. She craned her neck to look around. So many rough-dressed men on horses surrounded her that she could not see whether Nynaeve and Elaine had been captured as well. Some of the men wore bits of armor, a battered helmet, or a dented breastplate, or a jerkin sewn all over with metal scales, but most wore only coats that had not been cleaned in months, if ever. From the smell, the men had not cleaned themselves in months either. They all wore swords at their waists or on their backs. Rage hit her, and fear, but most of all, white-hot anger.
"I won't be a prisoner. I won't be bound. I won't."
She reached for Saidar, and the pain nearly lifted the top of her head. She barely stifled a moan. The horse paused for a moment of shouts and the creak of rusty hinges, then went ahead a little further, and the men began to dismount. As they moved apart, she could see something of where they were. A log palisade surrounded them, built atop a large, round earthen mound, and men with bows stood guard on a wooden walk built just high enough for them to see over the rough-hewn ends of the logs. One low, windowless log house seemed to be built into the mounded dirt under the wall. There was no other structure beyond a few lean-to sheds. Aside from the men and horses that had just entered, the rest of the open space was filled with cook fires and tethered horses and more unwashed men. There must have been at least 100. Caged goats and pigs and chickens filled the air with squeals and grunts and clucks that blended with coarse shouts and laughter to make a din that pierced her head. Her eyes found Nynaeve and Elaine bound head down across saddleless horses as she was. Neither seemed to be stirring. The very end of Nynaeve's braid dragged across the dirt as her horse stirred. A small hope faded that one of them might be free to help whoever was held escape.
"Light, I cannot stand to be a prisoner again. Not again."
Gingerly, she tried reaching for Saidar again. The pain was not so bad this time, merely as if someone had dropped a rock on her head, but it shattered the emptiness before she could even think of a rose.
"One of them is awake!"
a man's panicked voice shouted. Egwene tried to hang limp and look unthreatening.
How in the light could I look threatening tied up like a sack of meal? Burn me. I have to buy time. I have to.
"I will not harm you," she told the sweaty-faced fellow who came running toward her, or she tried to tell him. She was not sure how much she had actually said before something crashed into her head again, and darkness rolled over her in a wave of nausea. Waking was easier the next time. Her head still hurt, but not as much as it had, though her thoughts did seem to spin dizzily.
"At least my stomach isn't..."
"Light, I'd better not think of that." There was a taste of sour wine and something bitter in her mouth. Strips of lamplight showed through horizontal cracks in a crudely made wall, but she lay in darkness on her back. On dirt, she thought. The door did not seem to fit well either, but it looked all too sturdy. She pushed herself to her hands and knees and was surprised to find she was not tied in any way. Except for that one wall of unpeeled logs, the others all seemed to be of rough stone. The light through the cracks was enough to show her Nynaeve and Elaine lying sprawled on the dirt. There was blood on the daughter heir's face. Neither of them moved, except for the rise and fall of their chests as they breathed. Egwene hesitated between trying to wake them immediately and seeing what lay on the other side of that wall. "Just a peek," she told herself. "I might as well see what we have guarding us before I wake them." She told herself it was not because she was afraid she might be unable to waken them. As she put her eye to one of the cracks near the door, she thought of the blood on Elaine's face and tried to remember exactly what it was Nynaeve had done for Dailin. The next room was huge. It had to be all the rest of the log building she had seen, and windowless, but brightly lit with gold and silver lamps hanging from spikes driven into the walls and the logs that made the high ceiling. There was no fireplace. On the packed dirt floor, farmhouse tables and chairs mingled with chests covered in giltwork and inlaid with ivory. A carpet woven in peacocks lay beside a huge canopied bed piled deep with filthy blankets and comforters, with elaborately carved and gilded posts. A dozen men stood or sat around the room, but all eyes were on one large, fair-haired man who might have been handsome if his face were cleaner.
He stood staring down at the top of a table with fluted legs and gilded scrollwork, one hand on his sword hilt, a finger of the other pushing something she could not make out in small circles on the tabletop. The outer door opened, revealing night outside, and a lanky man with his left ear gone came in.
"He has no come yet," he said roughly.
He was missing two fingers on his left hand, too.
"I do not like dealing with that kind."
The big, fair-haired man paid him no mind, only kept moving whatever it was on the table.
"Three Aes Sedai," he murmured, then laughed. "Good prices for Aes Sedai if you have the belly to deal with the right buyer. If you're ready to risk having your belly ripped out through your mouth should you try selling him a pig in a sack. Not so safe as slitting the crew's throats on a trader's ship, eh, Coke? Not so easy, wouldn't you say?"
There was a nervous stir among the other men, and the one addressed, a stocky fellow with shifty eyes, leaned forward anxiously.
"They are Aes Sedai, Adin."
She recognized that voice, the man who had made the coarse suggestions.
"They must be, Adin. The rings prove it, I tell you."
Adin picked up something from the table, a small circle that glinted gold in the lamplight. Egwene gasped and felt at her fingers.
"They took my ring."
"I do no like it," muttered the lanky man with the missing ear. "Aes Sedai. Any one of them could kill us all. Fortune prick me. You do be a stone-carved fool, Coke, and I ought to carve your throat. What if one of them do wake before he does come?" "They'll not wake for hours."
That was a fat man with a hoarse voice and a gap-toothed sneer.
"My granny taught me of that stuff we fed them. They'll sleep till sunrise, and he'll come long afore then."
Egwene worked her mouth around the sour wine taste and the bitterness. "Whatever it was, your granny lied to you. She should have strangled you in your cradle. Before this he came, this man who thought he could buy Aes Sedai, like a bloody Shan-Chan, she would have Nynaeve and Elaine on their feet." She crawled to Nynaeve. As near as she could tell, Nynaeve seemed to be sleeping, so she began with the simple expedient of shaking her. To her surprise, Nynaeve's eyes shot open. "What?" She got a hand over Nynaeve's mouth in time to stop the word.
"We're being held prisoner," she whispered. "There are a dozen men on the other side of that wall and more outside. A great many more. They gave us something to make us sleep, but it wasn't very successful. Do you remember yet?"
Nynaeve pulled Egwene's hand aside.
"I remember."
Her voice was soft and grim. She grimaced and twisted her mouth, then suddenly barked a nearly silent laugh. "Sleep well root. The fools gave us sleep well root mixed in wine. Wine near gone to vinegar it tastes like. Quick, do you remember anything of what I taught you? What does sleep well root do?"
"It clears headaches so you can sleep,"
Egwene said just as softly, and nearly as grimly, until she heard what she was saying.
"It makes you a little drowsy, but that is all."
The fat man had not listened well to what his granny told him. All they did was help clear the pain of being hit in the head.
"Exactly,"
Nynaeve said. "And once we wake Elaine, we'll give them a thanking they won't forget." She rose, only to crouch beside the golden-haired woman.
"I think I saw more than 100 of them outside when they brought us in,"
Egwene whispered to Nynaeve's back.
"I am sure you won't mind if I use the power as a weapon this time. And someone is apparently coming to buy us. I mean to do something to that fellow that will make him walk in the light till the day he dies."
Nynaeve was still crouched over Elaine, but neither of them was moving.
"What is the matter?" "She is hurt badly, Egwene. I think her skull is broken, and she is barely breathing. Egwene, she is dying as surely as Dailin was."
"Can't you do something?" Egwene tried to remember all the flows Nynaeve had woven to heal the Aiel woman, but she could recall no more than every third thread.
"You have to."
"They took my herbs,"
Nynaeve muttered fiercely, her voice trembling.
"I can't. Not without the herbs."
Egwene was shocked to realize Nynaeve was on the point of tears.
"Burn them all. I can't do it without..."
Suddenly she seized Elaine's shoulders as if she meant to lift the unconscious woman and shake her.
"Burn you, girl," she rasped. "I did not bring you all this way to die. I should have left you scrubbing pots. I should have tied you up in a sack for Matt to carry to your mother. I will not let you die on me.